Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimbo.
Hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, and joining me from the other side of the desk is Jeff Rimbo.
Not the other side of the world, the other side of the desk.
Thank goodness you're here, and I'm glad you're here because I wondered if you were going to make it. Because listening to our producer, Nick Pike, trying to give you directions to our office on the phone today, it was like listening to a game of Monopoly.
No, it was. He did a great job, and it's not that long a walk from Piccadilly Circus to Oxford Circus. So if you can't make that, then you don't belong on the show.
All right. Well, you're here, and we're glad to have you here. And you're here for the rest of the season on Sky Sports as well. Looking forward to getting back in the studio, showing that touchscreen news, boss.
You know, I tell you what, this is so much fun because after you come out of, you know, coaching a season in pro football, you're tired. But this kind of rejuvenates you. And I enjoy, obviously, you know, working with you on a weekly basis on the podcast. But then now to have a chance to do the broadcast with you. And then got some pretty big news coming our way. I think I'm not going to let the cat out of the bag, but for our listeners and our viewers, I think we're going to have something real special for you around Super Bowl.
Yeah, we're going to. Well, hopefully. Let's talk about that because it's not fully signed off yet, but we are planning to. The hope is to take this podcast, as we do daily from the Super Bowl anyway, but to make it a video podcast, so a 30-minute video streaming as well, so people can see us in all our glory on Radio Row. And there's lots on Radio Row to look at, isn't there?
Exactly. That's the thing about the Radio Row thing that gets you so excited, because you remember last year we're sitting there and, you know, here comes Coach Vermeil, and you grab Coach Vermeil.
Here comes Doug Plank.
Doug Plank comes in. And then, you know, I mean, it's just everybody that's involved in the National Football League, players, coaches, management people, they're all there. And to have an opportunity to share all of that with the listeners and the viewers back here, I think is really, really cool. And I think it's going to be the only place where viewers and listeners in the UK can get that kind of inside content.
Well, so we'll certainly bring you up to date once we have all of that confirmed. But that's our plan at the moment. We're working on that to try and bring Inside the Huddle to you, video and audio from the Super Bowl. And it was interesting last year you mentioned Doug Plank, because I'm not the best at working this machine technically. So literally I was given instructions by Nick Pike on how to start it and how to save it at the end. So I literally could only press record, and then we couldn't stop it until we were done. And I remember halfway through the podcast, you were introducing Doug Plank to Henry Hodgson, and it's like, Henry, come and meet Doug Plank, Doug, Henry Hodgson, and it's all there because there was just so much going on, and I didn't know how to stop the recorder. So
well, it is. It's an incredible, it's an incredible amount of energy on Radio Row every day. And you see, the amazing thing is there's people from all over the world.
Right.
Every kind of broadcaster, every kind of country, everybody is there because that's where it all happens. And that's where, you break stories, you get great, great interviews. I mean, like you say, Doug Plank, one of the greatest hitters in National Football League history, is there. Yep. We're talking about his time how the 46 defense was named after him. And he and Fensick and the Bears and Walter Payton. And then Coach Vermeil comes, and there's a guy that's been to the Super Bowl, coached two Super Bowl teams, won a Super Bowl.
Just wandering past.
Yeah, and you get a chance to spend time with them and talk to them, and in a really unique setting because they're relaxed. Yeah. And, it's just kind of it's the madness of the Super Bowl.
So we are going to look back at week 12, but obviously it's later in the week now. We normally record this on a Tuesday. We wanted to wait until Jeff arrived in the UK. So not so much of a look back this week. We'll dig deeper into week 13 in the NFL and expand our preview section a little bit. We'll take your questions in the mailbag as well. But, Jeff, I want to start with, there's a question I saw in the mailbag, and I didn't write it down, but it did stand out to me. It was a two-part question. It was about the Denver Broncos sticking with Brock Osweiler. And I think we've kind of talked a lot about Brock Osweiler since he became the starter, and obviously gets that big win against the New England Patriots. But the second part of the question said, will Peyton Manning kick up a fuss? I mean, at some point, Peyton's had, in his career, has had everything go his own way. Now, if he gets healthy at a certain point, we talked about how it might be very awkward for the Broncos. I can't see Peyton ever wanting to sit on the sidelines. And there's been these reports about him maybe going and playing somewhere else again next year. Will he kick up a fuss?
You know what? I've watched this really, really closely. Mm. And, you know, you look for body language first. If he's going to kick up a fuss, he's going to do it with his body language before he does it, you know, with his voice.
Right.
And I don't see it. I can see a guy who's a hyper-competitive guy,
yep,
and is frustrated because he's not on the field. And obviously he wants to prove all those people that say he can't do it anymore wrong. Mm. The reality of it is, however, is Gary Kubiak and John Elway have got to do what's best for the Denver Broncos. This is a team that we saw last week beat an elite team. Now, New England's beaten up,
yep,
but they beat an elite team. So you've got to believe that they've got a chance to win the Super Bowl, that make a run and get hot. And if Osweiler manages the game like he has the two games that he's played, they've got a chance to win it all. Now, what's Peyton's role going to be down the stretch? That'll be defined, I think, very quickly. But what I hope will be the case, because I don't want to see him tarnish his legacy by his play or his actions.
Right.
You know,
right,
and I think for him to go out as a petulant guy and a you know,
a me guy
would really hurt what has been a tremendous legacy in the National Football
League. That was a good game, wasn't it, the Broncos and Patriots? I was watching it on the way home from the Sky Sports studios, and you know, it showed me again that never give up attitude that NFL players have to have, because I watched the first half of it, and New England were up 14-0, completing passes to Asante Cleveland. Never heard of him.
Let me tell you something. I'm gonna tell you something. Last week, I get a text message from June Jones, and he says in there, he asked me, do you have Darius Johnson's number?
Mm-hmm.
Darius was a receiver that played for us, then played for the Falcons for a couple years, had a little off-the-field thing and got released by the Falcons. And he said he had talked to Belichick, and they were trying to track Darius down. So, lo and behold, I get a message on my phone from a guy in the Patriots personnel office who I don't even know.
Right.
Trying to find
Darius Johnson.
I mean, it's like 007 stuff, right? I mean, they're so beat up right now at receiver that they're trying to find guys that they can get in and work out and see if they can't help them. Because, you know, Gronk goes down for at least, thank goodness it's a minimal knee injury, but Amendola's out for a while. Obviously,
Edelman's
gone. And, you know, that's a lot of good football players standing on the sidelines. And how about Brady's reaction? I mean, when he says post-game, I don't know if I've ever been more pissed off after a loss. I mean, you talk about hyper-competitive guys now.
I guess one thing that stood out for me in that game was, you know, afterwards the reports came out that Osweiler changed the winning play at the line of scrimmage. He had two plays called. One was a run to the right. He could get him out of that if you needed to, and they did. They ran to the left. And it's only one play, but that shows they've given him that trust. And he was able to make that adjustment at the line of scrimmage. Well, who did that very well in Denver and in Indianapolis? Peyton Manning.
And all of it is about the process. It's about the steps in Osweiler's development. You saw him get a little bit more the second week than he got the first week in terms of freedom.
Yep.
Now you're talking about an opposite call, which seems so insignificant to us.
Right.
Where, okay, well, how big is that? You go opposite, and go from the zone play to the right to the zone play to the left. But it's about trust. It's about trust with the coaching staff and trust with your teammates. And now Kubiak can point to that play and say, now we can give him a little bit more. And,
and
I'm telling you, Neil, the biggest thing when it comes down to an elite team, a team that can make a run, a team that can be a playoff team and have a shot at the Super Bowl, it's confidence.
Mm.
Confidence in one another. That great defense that Denver has, they're going to begin to believe more and more in this Brock Osweiler kid as long as he continues to develop the way he is right now.
Von Miller came up with a big sack in overtime. Patriots went 3-and-out, and that's when Denver get the winning score. Before we get on to a couple of other games from Week 12, there was another move on the coaching front. So Miami fired Bill Lazor, their offensive coordinator. They actually called just 7 running plays in their loss to the New York Jets. And Dan Campbell, I guess Jeff, he may not end up being the head coach of this team, but if he's going to be the head coach right now, he's going to do it his way at least. And he didn't see eye to eye with Bill Lazor. He's out. Quarterbacks coach Zach Taylor comes in.
Well, I tell you what, this is one of those really a difficult situation. I mean, here you go. You fire the head coach.
We said though, but we said right at the start, didn't we? It might be a difficult thing because Campbell was usurped.
Exactly.
Lazor. We said that right from the start.
Lazor's Campbell's immediate boss, immediate supervisor. And then all of a sudden, bam, the head coach is fired and Campbell jumps ahead of Lazor on the chain of command. That's never easy.
No.
And you know, Lazor has a little bit of a reputation, a guy that can be tough to work with. Mm-hmm. So you could see philosophically they weren't on the same page. 58th rose.
When Campbell comes from the Bill Parcells
tree,
doesn't
exactly.
he? Likes to.
He wants. To, he's a he tight end. He wants to.
Yeah, and
knock
he was a blocking tight end, wasn't exactly. he? He wasn't a Jimmy Graham.
Exactly. So you can see why he would get frustrated. And I watched his press conference this morning, and he talked about not sleeping. He said, "I only slept a couple hours after the game because he knew in his gut that he had to make a change." And you don't get opportunities in this business very many times, and this may be Dan Campbell's only chance. And even though he's an interim guy, he's going to do it the way he thinks he needs to do it, and I celebrate that. We're in a brave new world.
He's probably not hurting the team, is he? Because in the long term view of the Miami Dolphins, this coaching staff may not be there anyway. If a new guy comes in, then he's going to bring his own assistants, his own coordinators. And if it is Dan Campbell and he's not seeing eye to eye with Bill Lazor,
better now than later.
Right.
Better now than later. I think, you know, the thinly veiled relief, I guess, is the way I would put it, that the quarterback had when the news came to him that, you know, that I think 58 throws, too much for him.
Yeah.
Too much for him. That's not the – I mean, you're getting hit a bunch. And
right.
I think he knows that they need to run the football a little bit. And, you know, so I think that that's a positive. But I look around this morning and I see that the Chargers fire their special teams coach. Mm-hmm. Here we are 13 weeks into the season, and the Chargers got issues. They got more issues than special teams.
Yeah.
But they fire a special teams coach 13 weeks into the season. This is the kind of stuff that's happening now in the National Football League that you never saw before. You never saw guys getting fired midway through the season. But it's the reality of the business today.
When you see something like that with the Chargers, special, do you think, I mean, we don't know what goes on behind the scenes. Does it become a case of, maybe the guy's just difficult to work? It's about more than just on the field.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's like any acrimonious situation, divorce or whatever. I mean, it's never one person's fault. It's never just one thing. I know they had a punt blocked in the game the other day.
Yeah.
And, you know, they haven't been very good. But they haven't been very good in the secondary. They haven't stopped the run. They haven't ran the ball. I mean, they got a first-round draft choice. Mm. You know, that I love that kid came out of Wisconsin, and, you know, they've got him playing in a flatback system where he's not in the eye and can't see, and he's just looks like he's totally lost. So there's obviously problems.
What do you mean
there.
Flatback? Next to Rivers.
I'm sorry, it's good.
I think that's good stuff.
Either the pistol or the eye where the running back is lined up behind the quarterback and he's about 7.5 yards deep and he has a chance to really see, you know, the whole
we're gonna
do a feature on Peterson for the Sky Sports games this weekend, and you're gonna see how that really benefits a running back, a downhill running back like him. Melvin Gordon's that same guy.
Right.
So what they're doing is they're playing him in a shotgun system where he's standing next to the quarterback. The entry points for the running plays are all different. Your vision as a back is all different. The timing now is all different. And frankly, he hasn't gotten it.
No.
As we're 13 games into his rookie season.
I'm glad you said it's not always just one person's fault. Can you tell Mrs. Reynolds that? Whenever we have a row, it's always my fault.
I should have taken that back.
Isn't it?
I'm not talking. I've had two wives, Neil. I'm not talking.
Let's look at the Steelers and the Seahawks. What a great game. 39-30, the Seahawks win. We're going to do Seattle's game against Minnesota on Sunday. And I think, actually, there's an interesting dynamic with the Seahawks now, because no Marshawn Lynch, now no Jimmy Graham, which obviously hurts them. The defense is suddenly giving up a lot of yards and struggling to cope with high passing attacks. Is this very much Russell Wilson's team now?
No question. Hmm. No question. And you see his development. Again, I think, you know, you're going to see that it sounds like I'm plugging the show on Sky this weekend, and I am plugging the show on Sky this weekend, but we'll show you how he's developed. And
pocket
he's so much better. Exactly. Hmm. So much better from the pocket. And Pete says it. He said he's really grown as a pocket thrower. But, you know, you look at this football team, you look at Seattle, and there are some holes in Seattle. If you have a tight end that can work his way around inside those linebackers and that cover mm-hmm. three that they play, you know, there's room in there. In that game, you know, Pittsburgh really did a good job in the first half until Heath Miller got hurt. I think he had five catches by halftime.
Yeah.
Of working against the linebackers. Don't take the ball outside against those great corners.
Right.
Work inside in the seams and against the safeties and the linebackers. I think that's a recipe for success if you're going to play Seattle. Thomas Rawls, I like that young kid. Mm. There's a guy, undrafted guy out of Central Michigan, comes
right.
in, and he looks like he's a Marshawn Lynch wannabe. I mean, thick, tough, inside runner.
I wrote about him yesterday, Jeff, because I think there's a potential, although Marshawn Lynch signed a new deal this past offseason, it was one of those, again, all the money was loaded in that first year, this year now. There's a potential they move on from Marshawn Lynch because, and that's a big call to make for the Seahawks because of the emotional leadership he brings. But I think actually management, he's butted heads with their management quite a few times. Thomas Rawls next year will be paid $525,000 on a team that's trying to pay, well, has paid
Absolutely.
Russell, all those people that we talk about. You had Cam Chancellor's holdout this past year because they couldn't pay everyone.
Absolutely.
Go with that guy instead of the guy earning $8 million a year?
It's a reality of the NFL. Look at, and if you're a Chicago Bears fan,
same
thing. Absolutely same story. Langford is cheap.
Yep.
And Forte is older and more expensive. Well, in this day and age of the salary cap, and your quarterback's taking a big chunk of money, and if you get rid of him, there's a lot of dead money on the cap. You got to find places where you can improve your football team. Now you make the hard decision to get rid of a veteran player who's been a great player in your organization because you got a young one that's coming up. That's why doing your work in personnel is so important, because whether it's a Jeremy Langford or it's a Thomas Rawls, those are guys that are proven players now, and they're cheaper and younger.
Find a cheaper and younger. Look what the Seahawks were able to do for a couple of years with Russell Wilson. Then he becomes expensive after a while. But if you can find a young, cheap player at a vital position.
That's one of the reasons why that defense is, frankly, you know, starting to show little chinks in their armor, is you can't pay everybody.
No.
You know, you can't pay everybody. They've lost some good defensive players, and they've lost three defensive coaches in the last 5 years.
Yeah.
That's hard. That, you know, that's continuity is critical.
Is that Belichick?
No, that isn't.
Oh, Belichick after a running back. Jeff, can you get me a running back for the weekend? And what about Mike Tomlin? I was a little bit critical of Mike Tomlin on Sky Sports last Sunday, partly because I thought, why are you going for the throwing the challenge flag? But he actually proved to be right on that. But it was a 7-yard play on first down. I never know when he's going to kick an extra point, when he's going to go for two. I hated the fake call where
what
he throws it to his offensive
was
tackle.
When you actually
chart it out, isn't the idea of a fake, as you move into the fake position, to put stress on the defense? And the Seahawks looked absolutely fine in terms of covering it. Then you have Landry Jones rolling to his right, throwing back across the grain, to a left tackle.
A left tackle that was a tight end in college.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
But I'm just saying to myself, you know, the one thing I do understand, he did it early in the game.
Right.
And that's usually when you want to do those things because you got a chance to overcome.
And late,
it.
He went conservative. He kicked the field goal instead of going for
Which is more the book. I'm not, I tell you what. The Steelers have a chance. I really do believe they have a chance to be a wild card team.
Mm-hmm.
I truly do.
Well, look at their firepower.
Right now, if Big Ben goes down, it's going to be tough because they're not good enough on defense right now. They've got all those first-round draft choices. All four of those linebackers are first-round draft choices. Mm. But you look at that secondary, and they just aren't very good in the back end. And they can't generate enough pass rush unless they blitz. And when they blitz, they expose that back end. And, and that's where I think that, you know, again, you give up 39 points to Seattle. Seattle's not an offensive juggernaut.
Mike Tomlin said at halftime, we're going to live in hope and not live in fear. But I understand, because you've talked about this before. You sometimes there's a tendency you're more aggressive on the road. But you can still be smart about it. I don't think there was anything really smart about that fake. It was a fake field goal that kind of looked like a punt. He was so far back when he threw the football. And I just you just put 7 points on a plate for the Seahawks.
Yeah, and, you know, the design of the play was one of the things that was interesting to me, because I've seen that play run. And typically when they run it, the tight end, were away from where Landry Jones was rolling, would run a crossing route, and then you sneak the other tight end out the back door.
Right.
But that tight end stayed, so Lane just sat there, and he saw, I mean, Villanueva run, he's 6'6", 310 pounds. He isn't going to hide on the field. So all Jeremy Lane did was just sat there and waited for him to come out.
He took so long to actually snap the ball that I thought once they sort of moved into the fake formation, they weren't going to actually run it. It was like a bit like the Colts against the Patriots. You thought, there's no way they're going to run this. Everything looks too solid from a Seattle. There's no panic on the Seahawks' point of view. And I thought maybe they'll try and draw them offside, then take a penalty. But no, they ran it, and it just backfired.
What I thought was going to happen when they ran it was that once they shifted out, and you saw that the corner stayed on the backside. And I understand schematically what they want to do. They took the wing, they brought him all the way across the field, hoping that the corner would run over with him and there wouldn't be a backside defender. But when Landry Jones saw Lane stay back and not go over with the wing, I thought he would two-step and then punt the ball down inside the 20 and they'd do that.
Yeah.
But instead, he chose to throw it, and we knew the results.
Yeah. What else caught your eye in week 12, that was last week? I mean, we had the Thanksgiving Day games, which turned into one-siders. Anything else?
Well, one of the things that struck my eyes was the fact that, you know, obviously, and my boy Rob Ryan says, hey, they blamed everything in New Orleans on me, even Katrina, which happened like 7 years ago. That Saints defense, I didn't see any great improvement in the Saints defense.
The first touchdown we showed on Red Zone, we brought in, and Hoyer must have had, I mean, on average now, NFL quarterbacks probably getting the ball out of their hands 2.5 seconds, something like that, maybe three tops. Hoyer had that ball for about 7 or 8 seconds, and then just dumped it off to his tight end for a touchdown.
It was, yeah, you're exactly right. You're talking about full field reads. He went 1, 2, 3, 4, back to one.
Yeah.
And you know, the thing about it is the Saints are so cap-strapped right now, and I don't know how it's going to improve for him. I really don't know how it's going to improve for him, because, you know, you can't get enough of them in the draft. They've got so many issues, and they've made some decisions, frankly. Browner hasn't worked out for them. They spend all that money on him, and all these, the only categories leading the NFL in is penalties for a defensive back. So, you know, Sean Payton, if I'm Sean Payton, I'm thinking about, well, Miami looks pretty good right now,
and some of these
other places, because that situation is not going to get better.
It's funny, whenever I've met NFL general managers in, you know, my many years covering the league, met a lot of them, they always seem like guys who don't have enough hours in their day, you know, just to get everything done, managing a roster. It's a constant churning of an NFL roster all the time. How can Mickey Loomis be in charge of that basketball team in New Orleans as well?
I don't know.
How can you do both?
He's got to have, he must, first of all, he's got to be able to delegate an awful lot of that off his plate. But you're talking about a huge amount of work, because you're not only managing the roster, you're managing the salary cap, you're involved in every decision from how the team travels to how they practice to where they practice to what they eat to, you know.
Yeah, because even though you have people, I spoke to Dave Caldwell about that with the Jags, and even though they have people that you know, do the operational side of it, the general manager wants to know, what hotel are we in? How far is it to practice?
Absolutely.
When are we practicing?
The buses.
So you're, you're involved in all of that.
You can't even imagine. Oh, you can, because you deal with these guys and you interview these guys all the time, and you understand it. But the incredible amount of organization that it takes to move a football team.
Right.
You know, to move a football team from, you know, just to get them. I'll tell you a story. Jeff Fisher did a great job, I thought, one time of illustrating, trying to get his players to understand the value of a repetition in practice. Mm-hmm. And he had one of their analytics guys go through and actually put a price tag on what one rep of practice was.
Right.
For all the coaches' salaries, the trainer's salaries, the tape, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. So that, because these players think about money.
So make sure you
understand
use every rep.
How much that cost for you to have that rep so you don't waste it. And I thought it was a phenomenal way to illustrate to the players. And when you think about it, when you go and do it that way, oh, my goodness, how much really goes into just running a professional football team.
See, if Jeff Fisher was using his analytics guys that way now, the Rams wouldn't have lost four in a row. He's got them off researching Rodney Harrison's penalties. Come on,
that's called damage control. Yeah. That's not analytics.
Anything else? What about the Eagles?
And, the Eagles, boy, oh boy. I just, Chip. I feel bad for Chip. And, you know, let me just say this. Right now in the United States and you know, these past couple weeks in the States is now when all the college football stuff's starting to swirl. Mm-hmm. 11 or 15 Division I jobs open, and Chip's name gets linked to every single one of them because he's phenomenal success at Oregon.
Yeah,
I would really be shocked if Chip leaves. I think what's going to happen is he'll, you know, fight through this season. I think they might try and take a little bit of the power back from him in the off season. Mm-hmm. But I just don't see him leaving Philadelphia to go to college football, certainly. And I think it's kind of intriguing, this idea of him being traded to the Titans
Tennessee.
So that he can reunite with Marcus Mariota. But I think he's a competitor. He's a tough-minded guy. And this will certainly steel his resolve to get that thing organized and straightened out, because they're a mess right now.
And Jeffrey Lurie has never wanted to be that kind of owner who gives up on coaches quickly.
No, I mean,
he was with Andy Reid for a long time. I don't think he's that owner. So
absolutely.
I think that's maybe where there's some patience there. It was a big week for injuries again. Of course, we mentioned Jimmy Graham a little bit, but Tony Romo goes down again and is out for the rest of the season. It looks like they may have rushed him back. I can understand why, given that they were 0-7 without Romo. He said afterwards that he thought he'd put himself at increased risk, but he was happy to do that. And that's what you want from your leader. But the one thing I would say on that is, as soon as he went down injured, Jerry Jones said he's coming back in week 11 against Miami. There was no, we'll have to wait and see. It was, he's coming back for that one because that's the earliest that we've been given the prognosis. And it's turned out that he has re-injured that collarbone.
I tell you what, this past week, two little items that I got a chuckle from. I saw an interview with Jimmy Johnson, and they were talking about Jason Garrett and the Cowboys, and, you know, will Jason, you know, walk away from the Cowboys because all the frustration of dealing with Jerry Jones. And Jimmy Johnson said, who coached Jason, so he knows Jason extremely well.
Yep.
He said, no, you know, obviously Jason played here. He knows what he gets when you work at the Cowboys. And he said, every comment, anytime there's a question about a player, anytime there's a question about an injury, anytime there's a question about anything, as long as there's a microphone around, Jerry's going to be in front of it. Jason understands that. And then I saw Bruce Arians took a shot at the Cowboys that I thought was classic. And, you know, the Cowboys had a couple of young players show up for a flight to Miami, and they didn't have a coat and a tie on. And so they cut them after the trip.
Well,
now, wait a second. Now, that now it gets better, right? So they cut these two guys because they don't wear a shirt and a tie, you know, to the Miami Dolphin game. And the Arizona Cardinals pick one of them up, and they ask Arians about, you know, about the kid when they signed him. And he goes, well, let me just tell you, we're going to make sure he has a shirt and a tie for every road trip. taking the, you know, as they say, taking the Mickey out of the Cowboys a little bit. I think I love it.
At least that was Arians, because if it was Jimmy Johnson, that would have been a bit hypocritical, because Jimmy, in his Cowboys days, made a point of saying, well, they don't all get treated the same. He cut a backup running back. I think it might have been Lincoln Coleman falling asleep in a meeting. And the players all joke, well, if Emmett falls asleep in a meeting, they give him a pillow. You know, it's like, it was a different rule and a different time, you know. But let's move on to week 13 then in the NFL. And we'll spend a little bit longer on the games this week, because we're looking ahead to the games on Sunday that we got on Sky Sports. But first of all, on Thursday tonight on Sky Sports, the Green Bay Packers, who are 7-4, the Lions, who are 4-7. So the Packers have lost four of their last five. And suddenly the Lions, who were, I can tell you firsthand from the sidelines at Wembley, were atrocious, and they've won three in a row.
Yeah, it's two teams going in separate directions. Mm. Now, will the slide for the Packers continue, and will the rise for the Lions continue? I just cannot see that the Packers can lose this thing. They're too good a football team, and they're too, you know, that quarterback is extra special. Let me tell you a little story about, I was talking to a friend of mine at the Bears this week about the game this past weekend. Yep. where the Bears beat the Packers. Mm-hmm. And Aaron Rodgers took a shot on his non-throwing elbow. I mean, a vicious shot on his non-throwing elbow, and he couldn't throw the ball at the end, and it was in a driving rainstorm. Mm-hmm. So I just don't see those things as being factors again, and I think that the Packers will come back and assert themselves against the Lions.
Yeah, I'm going to take Green Bay as well. I watched, obviously, that game on Thanksgiving night, Jeff, and he seemed to be going to Davante Adams a lot, and Davante Adams had a nightmare, including the last pass that went through his hands. It was a bit high, but you think he could have a shot at making that catch. And I wonder, why are you still going to Adams time and time again when he's letting you down? And then suddenly I thought, well, he looked like he was the only one winning in terms of coverage. I mean, he was the only one getting off coverage.
Yeah,
they're struggling there, aren't they? It's a season-long problem.
When you look at them, I think one of the things that people have found with the Packers is that if you'll get up and play challenge and you'll press them a little bit, they've got some guys that need air. They need space to get open. And whether that's Jones or any of those other guys, if you play soft coverage, they can find holes in the zone. Mm. But when you man them up and you challenge them a little bit and you get up there and play that tight coverage, they can't separate. And I think that's one of the problems that they're having.
And you couldn't do that to Jordy Nelson because he'd make you pay.
That's exactly right.
All right, the Houston Texans at the Buffalo Bills. Again, two teams heading in different directions. Texans have won four in a row and they've won five of their last six. The Bills have lost two in a row and they've lost four of their last six. So the game's in Buffalo. I mean, I still think the Bills could be a playoff team, but there's like a hump there that they can't quite get over. Same again in Kansas City last week. Fast start, don't finish the deal.
Well, you know, Rex made a great comment this week. He talked about the rest of the season for the Bills. He said, we could win them all or we could lose them all.
Right.
And he said, what we haven't done, and he's exactly right, is we haven't proven that we're a consistent enough football team to play well, you know, a couple of 3 weeks in a row. Mm. I think they'll beat the Texans because the Texans, you know, still are the Texans.
Yeah.
Now, for the Texans, shoot, you got a chance to win your division.
Yeah.
But I think in Buffalo, it's going to be a handful for them, so I'm going to take the Bills.
I'm going to take the Bills as well. But just on the Texans, it shows how things can change and why you got it. You talk about keep grinding. You keep grinding. Earlier in the year, you know, Detroit were 1-7. Now they're 4-7. Kansas City have won five in a row and suddenly in position to make a playoff run. The Texans got absolutely embarrassed in Miami. I can't even remember the score, but they were down by 40-odd points in the first half. And they end up now back in the playoff race. I mean, this is why you keep working, right?
Exactly. I mean, a pro football season, and I just came off of one that were 18 regular season games and two playoff games. So that's 20 games, not counting exhibition games. Mm. It is a marathon. It is not a sprint. And you learn in time that if you just maintain your equilibrium and don't get too high on the wins and too low on the losses, that you just got to keep pounding and keep grinding and keep doing the right things. And that's all you can do.
Yeah, they lost that game to Miami 44-26. They were 41-0 down at the half. Looked like a team that was going to get Bill O'Brien fired, and they're back in the hunt. Incredible. The 49ers at the Bears. So San Francisco are 3-8. The Bears are 5-6 after that big win on Thanksgiving night. Just on the 49ers, I thought Blaine Gabbert looked all right the last couple of weeks. I mean, I wouldn't go much more than all right. Why are you smiling? He's all right.
As you said, all right. That's like, you know, hey, Neil, I got this friend of mine. Remember when you're in high school? I got this girl. I want
she's
you to
all
take.
Right.
She's really got a nice personality, Neil.
And she's
all right.
All right.
That doesn't exactly get you going, does it? Yeah, he's all right. He's all right.
Fair enough.
But let's talk about the Bears.
Because
the Bears now, I'm going to tell you something. John Fox is starting to see his formula for winning.
Yep.
They run the football. Mm-hmm. They play defense. They protect the ball. They do all the little things well. I got like I said, my friend on the Bears staff told me that Foxy stood up in front of the team 2 weeks ago, and he said, fellas, see all these wrinkles and all this gray hair? That comes from all the years I've been in this business, and I understand what it takes. Now, I'm asking you to do what's tough for people to do, and that's believe in the formula when they were struggling. They hadn't turned it yet, and they haven't turned it all the way yet, but they're trending in the right direction. So what he started to get is buy-in from the players. Here's the thing that the National Football League is so different now than what it used to be. You got to have great leadership from your coaches. And let me tell you why. Because you don't get your guys like you used to. It used to be you came in and they were with you from February on. Now, because of the collective bargaining agreement, you got less time.
Six or 7 week training camps.
Exactly. So you're talking about now the leadership has got to, number one, come from the coaches. Then it filters down over time through your organization. But here's an organization that really got rid of Jared Allen. That was their, quote, leader on defense. And then they've really harnessed their offensive
leaders. Well, there's another team that changed. So they were 0-3, the Bears, and it was ahead of the trade deadline. It was like, well, the Bears, there's going to be a fire sale going on at the Bears. And Jared Allen goes, Bostic goes to New England. And that seemed like they were giving up on this season, but they weren't. They were just...
That was addition by subtraction.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes you need to, they move big salaries, they move veteran players, they move to get young guys an opportunity to play. Now, you see the growth in Shea McClellan inside playing linebacker. The former first round draft choice, tried to make him
a
rusher.
Was just a guy outside, wasn't he?
Yeah, he's just a very average guy outside. Yeah. But he's now starting to show. Now, is he worth that first round price tag? I'm way too early to say that. But Jeremy Langford's starting to emerge. You know, they're getting Alshon Jeffery back now.
See how important Jeffery is on Thanksgiving night. I mean, that was only the sixth game he's played all season, but he makes such a difference.
No question. And, you know, all you're hearing from Martellus Bennett now is his numbers, not his, you know, crazy quotes and distractions and all those things. So I think Fox has done a great job in Chicago you know, I'm going to take the Bears.
All right, I'm going to take the Bears as well because they've got something good going on and Blaine Gabbert's just all right. let's move on to the Cincinnati Bengals at the Cleveland Browns. So we know that Johnny Manziel has blown another chance. Has he blown it or has the team not given him a chance? I mean, he's fallen out with Mike Pettine again after the party in a couple of weeks back. Now we're going to see Austin Davis start at quarterback for the Cleveland Browns.
You know, we talked about it earlier. We talked about trust, right? Trust, you know.
Yep.
You know, you gain it in drops and you lose it in buckets. And, you know, the reality of it is, here's Johnny Manziel who says to the ownership, says to the head coach, says to his teammates before the bye week, hey, I'm not going to be a distraction. I'm not going to do anything that's going to bring attention to me or, you know, degrade the organization in any way, shape, or form. And the next thing you know, there he is on video partying, and it just tired of it. Tired of him. You know, it's going to cost.
How many excuses are we going to make?
Yeah, and it's going to cost Mike Pettine his job, and that's a lot of jobs, right? That's not just Mike Pettine's job. No. That's a lot of families. That's a lot of people that are going to be caught up in this thing.
And I don't want to see people out of work, but I hope when they look at the Browns, they look at the people that have made the decisions above the coaches. Ray Farmer or whoever it is who's drafting these people, because people knew what Johnny Manziel was or who he was when he came out of college. He's flashing the money signs on draft day. I mean, you just start rubbing people the wrong way. You've got a wide receiver who's on a year-long ban in Josh Gordon. I mean, you're making mistakes on every level, not just having field goals blocked that are run back for heartbreaking touchdowns. I mean, it's starting in the front office as well.
Well, you're not bad for that long, and the Browns have been bad for a long time. You're not that bad for that long without having major problems. And the league is structured in such a way with the salary cap and with the draft and with free agency that everybody should have
an opportunity. Should have a cycle and a shot, right?
Yeah, and but you look at, it's been a long, long time since the Browns have been good.
All right, so we're both taking the London-bound Bengals?
Sure are.
All right, Cincinnati with that one. Just on the games in London, if you're our season ticket holder today, Thursday, December the 3rd, you can start to renew your season tickets for those three games in London next year. So make sure you do that. Get onto NFLUK.com for details. Let's move on to the Baltimore Ravens at the Miami Dolphins. Pair of 4-7 teams. Nothing to see here. Move on. I would actually pick Baltimore if I trusted Matt Schaub, but I don't. I mean, he looked like he did everything he could to throw away that game for the Ravens. He's lost, I think, six of his last seven starts. He's a turnover machine at quarterback now. I'm going for the mighty Dolphins at home. I haven't picked the Dolphins in about a month, but I'm going to do it right here.
Well, I tell you what, Jerry Rosberg, the special teams coach for Baltimore, should get a pay raise this week because those special teams won that football game. Two touchdowns. They return a kick for a touchdown. They block a field goal and return it for a touchdown. That's 14 points right there. Just your special teams. I don't see that happening 2 weeks in a row. Mm. And, you know, again, now Miami is struggled, but Baltimore is not a very good football team. You look at them right now, and the secondary is in, you know, not real good shape. Mm-hmm. I agree with you on the Matt Schaub thing, so I'm going to take the ball.
All right, both going Miami in that one. So our first game on Sky Sports on Sunday is the Seattle Seahawks at the Minnesota Vikings. Should be a good one. And we talked about the Seahawks defense and how they've struggled with high-powered passing attacks, Arizona, and now Pittsburgh this past week. This Minnesota attack plays right into Seattle's hands, doesn't it? Physical. Minnesota like to be physical. They like to run the ball. Do the Seahawks match up better against that kind of attack?
Well, I think if you're, you know, obviously if you're the Seahawks, you want a team that's going to come in and try and pound away at you because that's what you like. That's the kind of game you want to play.
Yeah.
I think our buddy Kyle Rudolph has a chance to have a big day in this game because that's one area where the Seahawks have had some problems with tight ends and working those intermediate routes. He's pretty good at all that stuff.
Yep.
You know, again, I think the thing that this will be a very, very physical football game, and both teams need this football game desperately. Mm-hmm. But I watched the Vikings close yesterday on tape. And certainly Zimmer's done a good job to get them better. I just don't know if they're that much better yet. So I'm going to take the Seahawks.
Yep, I think the Seahawks, Russell Wilson doesn't play as well on the road as he does at home, but he's certainly looking like he's getting into that groove. Be interesting to see the stuff you've got of him at the weekend there, looking improved as a pocket passer. The Battle of New York, then the New York Jets at the New York Giants. So Giants are 5-6, the Jets are 6-5. They kind of stopped the rot last week against Miami because it had been a lot of losses for the Jets in recent weeks. Both these teams kind of frustrate. They can be good and they can be maddeningly poor at times. Giants were in Washington last week for sure.
Yeah, you know what? I feel sorry for Tom Coughlin because he's such a good football coach. And they played in the first half of that game, Neil, like they didn't even want to be there.
Right.
And I think he alluded to that in his presser. You know, he said obviously they did play better in the second half, but you can't when you're trying to win a division championship, you don't have the mulligan to say I'm going to take a half off and then we'll play the second half. It doesn't work that way in the National Football League. I'm going to take the Jets. The Giants to me, obviously they can get some great plays out of those wide receivers, but I just really think that the Jets. You know, I like what Todd Bowles is doing.
Yep.
I think that, you know, that game, to go down and, you know, beat Miami last week was a big, big step for them.
I'm going to take the Jets as well. And I think I like what their receivers are doing. Brandon Marshall and Eric Decker seem to step up every week some way.
You know, Brandon Marshall has always been that guy. He's always been that tough red zone target that, you know, you watch the one game, the one touchdown he caught last week. I mean, I felt bad for the defensive back from you know, Miami because he had no chance. He just got out-muscled and out-physical. Right. That's a big man playing wide receiver.
One other thing on this game, the Jets have only allowed 14 sacks on the season in 11 games. It's the best in the NFL. And where is the Giants' pass rush coming from? Where has it been all season?
Well, you know, again, everybody knows about Jason Pierre-Paul's injury with his hand and how that's affected him. They have to pressure you to get quarterback, to get the quarterback. And you know, they've got some liabilities in that back end. And, you know, but if you're a Giants fan, you say, well, this is kind of the way we are. We seem to catch fire in the last half of the season. And if you go back to their last Super Bowl run, they really didn't play very good defense till about week 16. But I don't see the talent there in this Giants team. And, you know, again, I kind of like, frankly, I like that Fitz is having some success in New York, because he's been a guy that's been around a lot of places in the league and, you know, takes some shots from, you know, the Buffalo media is brutal on him, he's hung around and he's a veteran now. And one of the reasons why he doesn't get sacked very much, he can get it out of his hand. He knows where the free guys are coming and all that other stuff. So, you know, again, I just think the Jets are a little better football team.
I'm very fortunate to go around the States and work on the field with players. They show me their game, what they do with the techniques they use. I've never met a defensive lineman who hasn't told me how important their hands are. But I haven't seen that much talked about the fact. There's mention that Jason Pierre-Paul is wearing a club, you know, a complete club on his hand because of missing the finger. But there's not a lot of talk about, surely you can't grab anymore. You can't grab a jersey and shed a block. I mean, how big is that in his game? Because he's going to have to deal with it for the rest of his career.
Let me tell you how big it is. It's so big that if you're an offensive lineman and you've been in the locker room, you've seen it happen. Here's what the equipment guy does to the offensive lineman, right? He'll take their shoulder pads, and then he'll take double-edged tape and coat their shoulder pads with double-edged tape, then put the jersey over the shoulder pad with the double-edged tape there, because it's so important for those offensive linemen. So it fits so tight that that double-edged tape keeps the defensive lineman being able to grab that jersey and use the leverage of that grab to get to the quarterback.
Right.
And every defensive lineman, every defensive line coach I've ever been around talks about the importance of your hands. And I was around one really, really good defensive line coach, Jim Washburn, who used to, in meetings, have his players squeeze rubber balls and do those kinds
strength
of things
of their grips,
to get
right.
to make their grip strength better. Well, here's Jason Pierre-Paul that can't, you know, he's like you say, he's got a club on the end of his hand. He can't grab with that hand. That makes it, you're playing one-handed now.
All right, let's move on to the Arizona Cardinals at the St. Louis Rams. So the Cardinals are 9-2, one of the top teams in the NFC. Rams have lost 4 in a row. I mean, I've got to go Arizona here.
I love it. I love what Arians is doing out there. I love his approach. I love he's like a breath of fresh air in the National Football League. And
must be fun to play for.
I think he's a guy that you know, here's the deal. Last week, he comes in at halftime and just puts it right on his quarterback. He says the reason we're not playing very well, Carson, is because of you. Right,
that's the guy you've been relying on all year,
and that's your quarterback.
Yeah,
but you know, that's the kind of trust and that's the kind of rapport that he's developed on that football team.
Yeah,
because Bruce's going to say, if Bruce isn't doing a good job, he's going to say, "Fellas, I got to pick it up for you." Right, and that kind of honesty really goes a long way with players.
The Atlanta Falcons at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Falcons have lost 4 in a row now. They were started off 5-0, and really, Tampa Bay have come on as a not quite a contender, but much more than we
easy
thought.
Easy now, easy.
Yeah,
now.
But much more than we thought they would be at 5-6. Another one of those. We were talking first couple of weeks. Lovie gets embarrassed at home in week one. They haven't lost. Then won at home in the entire Lovie Smith regime. How long would he last there? Well, they've kind of turned a corner on that, but the Falcons have gone the other way.
Yeah, boy, the Falcons just, you know, they look so good early on. And it was like Dan Quinn had found them, you know, the medicine. And they were all drinking the Kool-Aid. And now it's kind of gone the other way. And Matty Ryan hasn't played as well as he used to play.
Strange turnovers.
Yeah.
The Colts a couple of weeks ago.
I just watch the Buccaneers. And you watch them close. And Martin is such an important part of their game. Because right now,
he's wearing himself out. He's having a long run every week, about 80 yards.
The reality of it is that Jameis isn't quite there yet.
No.
You know, and you see when too much gets put on his plate, that's when the interceptions come and the bad throws. I think the Bucs are getting better. However, you look at their defensive football team, and you know, they're trying to play that cover two system that they played so well in St. Louis when Lovie was there, and with the Bucs when Lovie was there as an assistant, and then, you know, he took it to Chicago. But they don't have the people right now.
No.
So I think Atlanta's going to win this.
Yeah, I'm going to go Atlanta on the road as well. I think by the end of the season, Jeff, these might be two teams on the outside of the playoff picture who will say, well, we actually improved in 2015.
Yeah, and for both of these football teams to say they were going to get to the playoffs this year was an awful tall order, because both of the organizations were really, really in the dumper.
Jacksonville Jaguars at the Tennessee Titans. I'm tempted to pick the Titans. They almost knocked off the Jags on Thursday Night Football a couple of weeks ago. It's a tough one, this one. Jacksonville just keep breaking your heart. You know, they're there. They're right there every week.
Yeah.
They're right there, and they can't seal the deal a lot
of
the time.
But you know what? I think they're getting better. And we talked about,
we
talked about Gus and what he's done there, and all the way from Mr. Khan on down. I think there's been a commitment to a process in Jacksonville.
I think they'll be fun to watch next year.
Yeah.
I think they'll be even.
Yeah, I like what Bortles is doing. Again, every once in a while you'll see him, make a young quarterback mistake.
Yeah, he had a touchdown pass last week where he's about 2 yards past the line of scrimmage. And,
and
I was watching it live on Red Zone. I was like, you can run this in, Blake. Run.
Yeah.
And then he threw it, and I was like, oh, okay, touchdown. Well, you seemed like you were a long way down for it, and then I saw the flag come on, not surprisingly.
Those are still some young player mistakes that they got to get out of him, and they'll get him out of him. But I think that what they're doing is the right thing there, and frankly, I'm going to say that, until Tennessee shows me they can score points, I'm going to take Jacksonville.
Sold. I'm going Jags as well. Changed my mind. See how quickly I did that? And Julius Thomas is getting on track a little bit as well.
Yep.
So that'd be fun to see how they get him involved in the offense. So we talked about the Chiefs then. Kansas City Chiefs at the Oakland Raiders. But the Chiefs, whether it's Charcandrick West, whether it's Spencer Ware, they've got a formula now, which is we're going to run the ball. We know that they can make plays on defense. But all of a sudden, Jeremy Maclin, Travis Kelce, if they can stretch the field as well, because they've always been, we can attack you this way, horizontally, but now they were starting to go downfield a bit more. I like the look of the Chiefs.
Yeah, and you know what?
And that's not to say I don't like the Raiders, because we've both talked positively.
The Raiders are getting better offensively. Yeah. I watched the Raiders. I went really through that Vikings-Raiders game really close to look at Adrian Peterson.
Yep.
And, you watch that game, and you just see... Boy, I tell you what, the Raiders aren't there yet on the defensive line. And a team that's committed to running the football, like Kansas City is, I think will have success. Now, fans got to understand, this is a huge, huge rival game.
Hate each other,
because
right?
When I was in Kansas City, they that was one of the things Coach Vermeil talked about in training camp in a different tone.
Mm-hmm.
He said, the Raiders, when we play the Raiders. And he was going through his objectives for the season. And the Raider game was, one of those... must win game. So it'll be a physical game, but I think Kansas City, and that running game is the difference.
They'll get a warm welcome from those Raiders fans, I'm sure. The Denver Broncos at the San Diego Chargers. Chargers snapped a 6-game losing streak last week, but for me, I see Osweiler, because fewer turnovers, I think there's that part of the game that's tidied up. And I still, unless it's Phillip Rivers and Antonio Gates, I haven't seen a lot else out of the Chargers at the moment, so I'm going Denver.
Yeah, I mean, you're just asking that quarterback, you're asking Phillip Rivers to just do too much. Mm-hmm. I mean, he has to throw for 500 yards and five touchdowns in order
for
them to win. Hey, that's just the way it is. They're, they're struggling on defense. The secondary is not playing well. They're beat up in the offensive line. He's getting hit all the time. I think Denver, especially because DeMarcus Ware may be back and available for this game, I'm going to take Denver.
All right, let's move on to the Philadelphia Eagles at the New England Patriots. So I like a stat. So Tom Brady is 62-4 in his last 66 home games. There you go. Patriots get back on track.
Enough said. Enough at that, and it's the Eagles. So that
right.
tells you all you need to know.
All right, both going New England there. So our second game on Sunday night on Sky Sports, the Carolina Panthers at the New Orleans Saints. So the Panthers are a perfect 11-0 on the season. The Saints haven't scored an offensive touchdown in 6 straight quarters, which is kind of unheard of for a Sean Payton, Drew Brees team.
Hey, but wait a second. I thought the problem with the Saints was with the defense.
Yeah.
That's why we fired Rob, right? Well, who's going to fire him now? Who's going to...
That was Rob's fault, because they weren't going up against a tough defense in practice.
Ah, yeah, that must
see?
Be.
See, so they weren't getting
ready. And Katrina.
Yeah,
and,
everything.
Yeah,
all those drunks on Bourbon Street. Yeah, I mean, this is a tough one, I think, for the Saints to win. They do seem to raise their game against the Panthers. But, Jeff, my observation of the Panthers is that as the NFL's starting to bunch up and these undefeated teams are falling each week, the Panthers are starting to blow teams out. They've won by 17 points, by 26 points, and now by 19 points. They're starting to look like a genuine Super Bowl team.
Yeah, and I'm going to tell you something. To be undefeated... in the National Football League at this point in the season.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an incredible accomplishment, because you can go back in history and there haven't been very many teams at this point were undefeated. And so what they're doing there, what Ron Rivera's doing there, is really an amazing feat. But you know, each week it gets tougher. And each week, you know, that target on your back gets a little bit bigger.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't think the Saints have the personnel to beat the Panthers.
No, I agree. We're both going Carolina in that one. We're agreeing on a lot of games here. It's because we're together. See, we actually haven't disagreed on one game. That's, you're so influential when you're in person. Yeah, I just follow you.
Listen to you.
We haven't disagreed on one. That's amazing.
Great minds think alike.
Obviously. The Sunday night game is the Indianapolis Colts at the Pittsburgh Steelers. So when these
teams Oh, boy. Now this
was the highest scoring game of the season last year. Pittsburgh won 51-34. Are we seeing the same number of points with Matt Hasselbeck under center?
I'm going to make a statement here. And I'm going to do it just to see if I can wind you up. But I'm going to say that
the Colts
are better.
Stop it. You can get out of it. You can go back to Canada. If you're going to go where I think you're going.
I've been saving that one for the whole. No.
Don't
I don't think they can. I really don't.
And do you think they're better off? I've got a question here. I'm going to be fair. We're going to address this then. So we've got a question from Alex Simpson. Says, should Andrew Luck return when he's fit, or should the Colts stay with the hot hand in Matt Hasselbeck? Now, if I'm going to say they need to go back to Andrew Luck, then I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth, because I think the Broncos should stick with Brock Osweiler. But I think that Luck still has the physical skills to get the job done. I don't think Peyton Manning does anymore. But this might be a moot point anyway, because Luck's seriously injured. Those injuries, they said they were kind of injuries that you get in a car crash. He may not be back for a while anyway.
Well, the word I heard was he's actually starting to throw now.
Oh, is he?
I'd be
surprised if he's back.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he's a tough kid.
Yeah.
There's no question about that. Here's the thing. The one thing I will say about that, and I'm not taking the mickey out of you now, I'm just... the turnovers, the absence of turnovers gives the Colts a chance. Now, what will be interesting to see is if Hasselbeck can take a team... If they get behind, can they score enough points with him,
the
quarterback? That I'm not sure about.
No, Luck did tidy up the turnovers in his last game before getting injured. They beat the Denver Broncos, knocked the Broncos from the undefeated. That was the first game with Chudzinski as offensive coordinator. So for now, if Luck was healthy, I would go back to Andrew Luck. I'm going to pick Pittsburgh to win this game, though, in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I think so, too. Pittsburgh needs to win this game, and it's in Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh's a hard place to play, particularly at this time of year.
I got mine in first that time, so you just copied me. The Dallas Cowboys at the Washington Redskins to finish off Monday Night Football. So Dallas are going back to, Matt Castle, I guess, and the Redskins, who've gone a perfect 5-0 at home this season. I'm going to pick Washington to keep it going at home.
I like that! I like that.
How do you like that?
How you like that?
you agree?
I agree. You know what? All joking aside, Kirk Cousins, huh?
I think he's a good story.
He's a great story.
No one's talking about RG3 very much anymore.
No. You know what? And Jay Gruden, who took so much criticism for how can you, not just criticism, that took courage, because you know that RG3 is the owner's guy.
Did he do that because we're now seeing the offense that Jay Gruden wants to run? There's none of the read option anymore. Maybe
I think that's the vision he had for his football team. And you know, the reality of it is that you talk about all those read option guys and all those read option teams, the league has kind of caught up to it now.
Yeah.
It's just like the Wildcat was, and they go through these cycles where something new's added, and but the reality of it is you're going to expose your quarterback to enough hits. How many read option quarterbacks are standing on the sidelines right now not playing? Mm-hmm. It's hard enough when you're in a drop back game.
Yeah.
All right. Now you expose them to hits in the run game. Sam Bradford's out. You know, RG3's out.
Kaepernick's cloudy.
Yeah, exactly. So you go through that and you say, maybe there's some truth to the fact that you got to run the ball, throw from the pocket to win in the NFL.
All right, so that wraps up our predictions. Let's take a couple of quick questions from the mailbag to finish off. So we've had Alex Simpson's question about Andrew Luck. Here's a good one from Mark Ford, Jeff. He says, Coach, can you explain how the headsets work in the NFL? How many people are allowed on the system? Can everyone talk at the same time, or does the quarterback defensive captain only hear the play caller's voice? Talk us through that headset, because there's a period as well where it cuts off, right?
Yeah, there,
it's not like you can say he's coming behind you while the game's going
10
on.
Seconds left on the play clock.
Right.
And here's the way it typically is. The head coach has the ability, he has a clicker on his headset that you'll see him work sometimes when you notice him down digging around their pocket. That's a clicker that allows them to talk to both the offensive coaches, the defensive coaches, or the special teams coaches. And then the way the sideline is structured, the defensive coordinator, for example, who's calling the plays upstairs typically, or the offensive coordinator who's calling the plays, everybody who's involved in, for example, on offense, there'll be one coach assigned to personnel changes. Mm-hmm. So let's say the offensive coordinator wants to go with one tight end and three wide receivers and a single back, okay, what we call ace formation. He'll call ace, and now that coach on the sideline hears that call. He gets the people on the field and off the field. That's his. So he has to have communication to the mm-hmm. offensive coordinator. The offensive line coach will have it. There's also a sideline phone for the players where a coach upstairs can, you know, have a personal conversation with a player on the sideline. But typically the offensive coaches are all tied into the offensive coordinator, the defensive coaches to the defensive coordinator. A lot of special teams coaches don't use a headset. Now, some do. I prefer to use one because there's a guy up there that I give specific things to
look for. But
who's
the guy talking to the quarterback?
Offensive coordinator and the head coach primarily.
Right.
And when you talk about to the quarterback, if you're talking about the helmet,
yes,
you know, the microphone in his helmet or the earpiece in his helmet, it's the offensive coordinator typically, not the quarterback coach, who makes the play call and gives him the whatever instructions. He may say, all right, we're going to run, you know, trips right, Z post, X delay, watch the strong safety. That's the kind of stuff that will go to him.
And if one team's headsets go down for any technical reason, they have to switch off the other ones. We had that in a couple of games, especially in New England's game with Pittsburgh in week one.
Exactly, because, you know, interestingly enough, the headsets in New England...
They're getting the team radio commentary, weren't they?
They pick up radio commentary. They pick up all kinds of things. And sometimes they go dead at the most inopportune time.
Yeah, third and ten.
So if you're a conspiracy theorist, not to say that.
One more question, Jeff, to finish off this week's Inside the Huddle. It comes from Tom Marshall, and it's an interesting one in a way. He says, as the Carolina Panthers head to the playoffs, would a regular season loss help them go deep in the postseason?
You never
want to encourage a loss, but...
That's a really great
question.
Think about
the pressure that builds week on week as you go for perfection.
Yeah, that's really a great question. The reality of it is, when you get to the playoffs, it really does. You don't carry anything into the playoffs, really, because you recognize that it's one-and-done football.
Right.
If you don't perform, you're out. Now, it depends on the personality of your football team. Mm. I've never been one that felt like losing was good. It was a good thing. I prefer to win every time.
Yeah.
But if you have a football team that maybe loses a little focus or is a little young and doesn't have the maturity to deal with winning, which, you know, the Panthers seem ultimately resilient to that. Because when I worked for Mark Trestman, he used to talk all the time about don't get the success flu.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they've had more success than anybody in the National Football League through these weeks of the 13 weeks of the season or whatever it's been. And they seem just resilient to it. Mm. And I think that's because of the job that Rivera does in that locker room.
Ron Rivera talked, he was actually on the BBC highlights show talking about how he looks at other teams around the NFL and all their guys were doing magazine interviews and this kind of thing. And he used those as examples to his team to stay focused and stay concentrating on the task at hand. And of course, he's been through that, Jeff, with the 85 Bears. That was a team that went deep into the season undefeated. They eventually lost to the Miami Dolphins. Dan Marino tore them apart, and Nat Moore, he was a big part of that game.
Yeah, they got after the 46 because they put three and four wide receiver sets on the field, and they couldn't cover. But I think the thing that's amazing about it is that when you get on a run, you gain confidence in all those other things. But like you say, all the distractions become magnified because now everybody wants a piece of you. And everybody wants you to do this and do that. And if you're not careful, you can lose your focus.
All right. Well, we didn't lose our focus for 1 hour and 4 minutes. Bumper podcast. Good to have you back, Jeff.
Awesome to be back.
All right. So this has been Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. Make sure you check out myself and Jeff on Sky Sports coverage this Sunday night. Until next week, Jeff.
Aloha.